Fine. So yesterday we laid out the problems, right? We noted that the Gemara has contradictions about Kedushah Shona and Shniyah. We said that the whole idea that Kedushah Shniyah should be Kadosh but not Kedushah Shona is weird. As the Kesef Mishnah notes, within the Rambam, it's particularly problematic because the Rambam says that Kedushah Shniyah is stronger than Kedushah Shona because it was done through Chazakah, through dwelling, and rather than Kibush. Conquering. And the Kesef Mishnah has two problems. First of all, why is Chazakah stronger than Kibush? Second of all, the people in the time of Yeshua also lived there. Right? So it's Chazakah plus Kibush. As opposed to just Chazakah. Why is it that Yerushalayim might be different than Eretz Yisrael, where Eretz Yisrael is subject to these changing Kedusha? We also noted that in Semeral the Gemara, it implies that this is not a complete removal of Kedusha. Right? It's a partial, it's a localized removal of Kedusha for the purpose of certain mitzvot, and we have to figure out what the nature of that is. Right? That's where we left off yesterday. I hope that you guys got a chance to look at different Makarot, but we'll see. Okay. So, before we look at the Makarot, someone want to try to offer... Anyway, let's read one more Rambam, just so we have all the Rambams, then we'll try, okay? So yesterday we had the Rambam Beit HaBechira, but the other Rambam is this one in Trumot Aleph Hey, right, which has certain similarities, where he says, Kol she'echziku olei Mitzrayim v'nekadesh kedusha rishona, anything that the people who left Egypt conquered and held onto, v'nekadesh kedusha rishona kevin shegalu batlu kedushatan, when they went into Galut, when they were exiled, so the kedusha disappeared. She'kedusha rishona lefi she'aitam b'nei ha'kibush bilvad,
right? In the second halacha, it's even worse.
So the Rambam in the second halacha says that the first Kedusha, the Kedusha of Yeshua, was only Kibush, which of course, according to the Mishnah, that's not true. They lived there too. But when the people came back and from Galut came and they sanctified it a second time, it is forever. And what did they do? The parts that were conquered by Mitzrayim but not Bavel, they left them. So they're not chayiv in Shemitah, but they are chayiv in Trumot Ma'asro. So that you would give Truman Maser and give it to the poor people during Shemitah, right? Which again captures very well the fact that this has some sort of middle status, right? It's enough Eretz Yisrael, right? That which Yeshua conquered Benar Ezra is enough Eretz Yisrael that it's Chayiv in Truman and Maser, but not enough Kadosh that it would be Chayiv in Shvi'it, in Shemitah, right? Rabbeinu HaKadosh Yitir Beit Shan, Me'otam HaMekamot, Shalachziku Ben Molo Babel, Bumnimna Al Ashkelon U'patra Min HaMaser. The same thing is true of Beit Shan, okay? So... Let us. Where did I put it? I already put it here.
I am so tired.
Okay, yeah, so let's try to understand. So, what do you think? Let's try to explain as many of these questions as we can. Yes?
So, Yerushalayim has the normal designation of the land of Israel, but also this kind of special designation of Rabbanic secondary.
Okay. Good. So you're starting with the Rambam's distinction between Yerushalayim and Eretz Yisrael, right? And the Rambam says the difference is that Yerushalayim has Kedushat Shechina, v'Shechina ina betela. Okay, good. Now, does that help us explain any of the other questions, right? That explains what does the Rambam mean by that, right? What does it mean? Shechina ina betela, right? Okay, so you're trying to articulate it further. Okay, good. So what do you want to say? Well, that's the Rambam's formulation, right? Right?
It does seem to have this, since the Avodah, pretty much, of the special designation of being the future site for the holiness of God to rest.
So it's an interesting, right, suggestion, which is that what is Shechinah in Betela? It doesn't just mean that it can't be nullified in the future. It means that it is, right? It's eternal, right? It's a constant. It started before and it'll go after, meaning It's not dependent on how people relate to it. It's dependent on how God relates to it. And that pre-existed the spot, or pre-existed our presence there, and therefore it, good, okay. So now that, so that's, let's say, pushing farther the Rambam's position, different than Yerushalayim and Eretz Yisrael. Now, what does that do, though, right? Does that help us understand Kedusha Rishona, Kedusha Shnia of Eretz Yisrael, right? Of the rest of the land. It might not, right? It could be these are two separate questions, right? But since we're already talking about it, is there a way that those might be linked, right? They're not necessarily linked, right? It's not necessarily linked, but, right? You at least have to experiment with the possibility that it's linked. Why would you think it might be linked, right? Why would you think that the Rambam's argument about Kedusha, Kedushat Yerushalayim is linked to Kedusha Shnia?
It seems to be a separate kind of Kedusha that
exists. Right, meaning the first thing you just methodologically, right, is you have it, you have sort of a possibility you need to explore, which is, when it comes to Kedusha Ha'aretz, there's a type of Kedusha which is Batel and a type which is not. And then the Rambam says, but there's a type of Kedusha in Eretz Yisrael called Kedusha Yerushalayim that's not Batel, ever even Kedusha Rishona. So now, right, methodologically, you'd say, okay, that means I have a model of Kedusha that's never Batel. I have it, and I have another Kedusha which is not Batel, and I don't really understand the model, right? It's called Chazaka versus Kibush. So maybe what I should try to do is say those are related. Right, those are related, that in some way, right, if A equals B and B equals C, then A should equal C, right? Good. In what way could I formulate that? Let's say I did that. Is there a way to do it? It's not obvious. There's not an obvious way to do that, right? Again, what the methodological move we're trying to, this attempt that we're trying to suggest is, Kedushat Yerushalayim is forever, and Kedushat Shnia is forever. Kedusha Rishon, Kedusha Yerushalayim, according to the Rambam, is forever because the Shechina, and Kedusha Shnia is forever because of Chazaka. Are those related? Again, it might not be. They might be, look, there are two different types that are permanent.
So there's like an area.
But it happens to be the way the Rav takes it, which is why I'm, right? It is a possibility. The Rav argues, basically pulls this move, right? Which is, permanent Kedusha is found in two different places, Yerushalayim and Kedusha Shnia. One because of Shechina, one because of Chazaka, they must be related, or they could be related. Okay? That's his move. So I want to at least explore it. Okay, so what would it mean? Why would that be true?
There's like, maybe there's a specific, right? Because David expands out Israel, he conquers Syria and stuff like that by conquering.
But okay.
So maybe there are specific areas of the land which can take on.
Right, but we're talking not about Davids, we're talking about Ezra's. Okay, Mordechai, you want to try? Okay.
God did not conquer Tyre and Moria in order to live there. God.
Right, okay, so Mordechai says maybe they're parallel, right? Meaning God's presence dwelling somewhere, right? That nature of Kedusha is, right, parallel more to Chazaka, to simply dwelling rather than conquest. So maybe that is the beginning of an explanation. Maybe, right? I think we'd still need more to flesh it out. But you're right. There's a certain similarity there. So I'll read you a few pages here from Ala Tshuva, right? The Rav every so often has random lumdish asides in Ala Tshuva. So in the last chapter of Ala Tshuva, we have it on the shelf somewhere, right?
Yeah.
Somewhere. Anyways, he writes like this. So he says, Maimonides distinguished between the sanctification of the temple, which is operative for all time, and that of the land regarding which the first sanctification has been nullified, while its second sanctification remains operative for all times. Okay? So now he says, okay, why? So while the sanctity of the temple is by virtue of the presence of the Shechina and therefore cannot be annulled, Joshua's sanctification of the land stems from the force of conquest. Thus, another conquering force can come and annul it. And why isn't Ezra's sanctification annulled? Because Ezra did not sanctify it through conquest, but through the right of possession assumed by the returnees from Babylon. The scope of right of possession in the halacha encompasses settlement, residence, turning wilderness into settled land. In a word, colonization. And how much stronger is settling on the land than military occupation? If Joshua's conquest was annulled by the Babylonian conquest, then Ezra's settlement should have been annulled by the Roman conquest of the land and destruction of the second temple. They laid the land waste, uprooted settlements, and burned the fields. What then is the difference between Joshua's conquest and Ezra's possession? For both were terminated by acts of destruction, right? He says it doesn't make any sense, right? What's the logic for saying that kibush can be undone? Conquest can be undone by conquest, but so should dwelling be undone by dwelling, right? The second one, they totally destroyed the land. No one lived there, right? Well, right, so he says, so the Rav has an argument. He says, why does he think that these two are linked? Why does he want those to be linked, though? Right, the Kedusha of Ezra to be linked to Kedushat Yerushalayim. What's his hint that they're linked? The fact that where does the Rambam introduce his theory about Kedushat Ezra versus Yehoshua? Not in the, right, he throws it out there in Hilchot Trumah. Where does he develop it? In Beit HaBechira. Right, in number 8 here, right, in the middle of his discussion of the Beit HaMikdash, and why Yerushalayim is different from Eretz Yisrael. So Toch Kedei, he says, oh, and why is Yehoshua different from Ezra, right? Yerushalayim is different from the rest of Eretz Yisrael, right? So the Rambam does seem to see a link between them. I'm skipping that page. No. Oh my God. Okay, so he starts off the way Mordechai does, okay? Which is, it appears that the explanation of the difference between the sanctification of the temple and the sanctification of the land, of that enacted by Solomon and that by Joshua, is based on the same principle underlying the difference between Joshua's sanctification of the land and Ezra's. In other words, Ezra's sanctification came about by virtue of the presence of the Shekhinah, while Joshua's sanctification was by virtue of conquest. Okay, so his first move is to say that Chazaka, right, if we know that the only type of Kedusha that is forever is that of the Shekhinah, and the Kedusha of Ezra, and that's why Yerushalayim is Kadosh always, and the second Kedusha of Ezra is forever, so what does he do? He does A equals B, B equals C, A equals C, which means Chazaka means Shekhinah. And therefore, Yerushalayim is Kadosh forever and Kedusha Ezra. Now, Joe says, and therefore what? Right? And just in the case of the temple, the dwelling place of the Shekhinah, one cannot speak of sanctification for a limited time only, since the sanctification of the Shekhinah is operative even when the temple is desolate. Sanctity and desolation are not mutually contradictory terms, though desolate the sanctuary means enforced. So it is also the case regarding Ezra's sanctification. Desolation in itself does not mean that the land is denuded of its sanctity. So then he says, conquest and desolation, these are mutually exclusive terms. Therefore, while the sanctification of the land operative as of Joshua's conquest was later annulled by another conquest, this was not so regarding the second temple's sanctity. This is because Ezra's act of sanctification was not derived from the power of conquest, but came from the sanctity of the Shekhinah, which prevailed during the second temple period, not only in the temple and in Jerusalem, but throughout the entire land of Israel. Now why, right? So now he's described, but he hasn't explained why, right? He hasn't argued for. So here he says, he continues, the entire distinction between sanctified for that time and sanctified for all time hangs on the issue of choice. Sanctification always comes down to the world after God chooses. And there have been four kinds of divine election. So then he goes through, there's the choice of Israel, of the Kohanim, of the Beit HaMikdash, and Yerushalayim. Okay. What is the law of the sanctification of the land of Israel as a whole? That is it a chosen land or not? Then he goes on, I'm not giving a Zionist answer, I'm not giving an anti-Zionist answer, I want a halachic answer. What is the status of the land of Israel in the eyes of halacha? Okay? So now he goes a whole half a page on why this has nothing to do with Zionism. Fine. Even though he is a Zionist. The meaning of the sanctity brought about by chosenness means the sanctity of holiness bestowed by the presence of the Shekhinah. In the days of Joshua and throughout the first temple period, the country did not possess the sanctity that is derived from chosenness, but rather the sanctity due to conquest. This type of sanctity can be nullified, while the sanctity that comes from chosenness can never be annulled. On the other hand, the sanctity of the land in the time of Ezra was due to chosenness, characterized by the holy presence of the Shekhinah. And now he says why. Okay, we still haven't gotten to why. So someone tell me why. Yes, why?
I argue against all of that.
Well, before we get that, first let's understand it, then we can argue. Why? Right, again, the Rav is making the move. Kedushat Yerushalayim is forever, Kedushat Ezra is forever. Therefore, they should be the same. And in one case, the Rambam calls it Shekhinah, the other he says Chazakah. And now he says, why? Well, he says they're both about chosenness, and chosenness can never be unchosen.
No,
okay. Correct. It's about kibush. That's what he says. Again, I'm not arguing for it. I want to explain the Rav first. Right? So why does he say it? So why does he think this is true? So here's his argument, okay? In Joshua's day, the sanctity of chosenness was not possible, since the Beit HaBechira had not yet been built, and the sanctity of the land of Israel is derived from that of the Holy Temple. Right, skipping down, the conquest by Yehoshua occurred at a time when there was no established sanctity of Jerusalem and no Holy Temple to radiate its sanctity through the whole land of Israel. The conquest led by Joshua began with a battle for the borderlands from Jericho down to the Negev. For the guys learning Yehoshua with me, that's what we're up to. From there, the Mediterranean seashore, along the coast up to Acre, and thence to Galilee and the land of Naphtali. Every area seized was considered sanctified by virtue of the act of conquest. The sanctification by conquest proceeded from place to place until it got to Jerusalem years later in the time of David. And only afterward, in the days of Solomon, when the Holy Temple was built in Jerusalem. Thus, the land of Israel received sanctity by conquest even before the Holy Temple existed. And that same pristine sanctification by Joshua was brought about by conquest, and it was later annulled by the subsequent conquest by others. It contained nothing of that element of divine chosenness which confers unnullifiable sanctity. The first temple was built after the land of Israel had already been sanctified, etc. However, the situation was different during the time of Ezra. When Maimonides speaks of the possession with which the Chazakah, which was the returnees from Babylon, possessed the land, where did this occur? Not in the peripheries, but first of all, right in the center, in Jerusalem. Ezra did not go about reclaiming areas in the land of Israel. He first set about to build the temple and to restore the walls of Jerusalem. To achieve that, naturally, Jews had to live in Israel, so the temple should not be rebuilt in a country inhabited mainly by Gentiles. Thus it's written in Ezra, then rose up the chief of the fathers of Judah and Benjamin, etc. So how was the land sanctified in the days of Ezra? By the right of possession. Possession itself does not bring any sanctification. When the Holy Temple, the chosen dwelling place of the Shekhinah, was built, it bestowed sanctity on the whole land of Israel. This time, the sanctification did not gravitate inward from the circumference, from the outer peripheries towards the center. Quite the contrary. The sanctity was established first in the center itself, and from there it spread outward like a fountain gushing forth, overflowing into the Jerusalem environs and from thence to the rest of the land of Israel until all of it was completely sanctified. That which sanctified the land of Israel in Ezra's days was the temple, the dwelling place of the Shekhinah. This is why Maimonides ruled that the sanctification of the land by Ezra was in the same category as that of the temple, whose sanctification by Solomon was not terminated because the Shekhinah cannot be withdrawn. Okay? So that's the Rav's Lomdish argument. Let's just get it out on paper. Let's take it out. So the Rav's argument goes like this. Okay? Let's just follow his logic. We have three Kedushot in play. Kedushat Yehoshua, which is Batel. Kedushat Ezra, which is not Batel. And Kedushat Yerushalayim, which is not Batel. So the Rama, point two for the Rav is that the Rambam discusses Kedushat Yerushalayim, Kedushat Eretz Yisrael in Hilchot Beit HaBechira. And therefore, we think that these aren't just similar, but they're conceptually connected. Okay? So now he says, okay, but the reason for Kedushat Yerushalayim is the Shekhinah, the Kedusha of Ezra is about Chazakah. So now the Rav says, well, if they're linked and both of them are forever, that's because they're the same. Why are they the same? So here the Rav comes up with the following chidush, right? That in the time of Yehoshua, they started at the periphery, right? Before Yerushalayim was chosen, right? And built up. And therefore, the Kedusha was independent of Yerushalayim and therefore was dependent on conquest. If it's dependent on conquest, it can be undone. But when Ezra returned, he returned in the opposite way. He started by settling Yerushalayim and then settled the country so that Yerushalayim would be able to exist politically. And therefore, the chazaka, the resettling of Eretz Yisrael in the time of Ezra, was fundamentally an expanded settlement of Yerushalayim. And if that's the case, then just like the Kedusha of Yerushalayim is forever because of the Shekhinah, the resettling of the land which started in Yerushalayim and then radiated outwards, right? It's not really about chazaka. It was that the way the chazaka was carried out was that it started in Yerushalayim and went out, and therefore settling the land of Israel in the time of Ezra was a function of settling Yerushalayim. And therefore is Kadosh forever just like Kedushat Yerushalayim. Right? So that's the Rav deals with a lot of the problems, right? What does chazaka really mean? Okay, let's go through the questions. Chazaka means Shechina. How does he deal with the Kesef Mishnah's problem? Again, he doesn't spell it out. Again, this was a sicha on Shuva. But why is it that chazaka plus kibush isn't stronger than chazaka? Because it's not really about chazaka. It's about Shechina. It's really about where do you start? Do you start in Yerushalayim or start outside? Right? And he's saying it's not really about chazaka or kibush per se at all. Right? Why is Yerushalayim different than Eretz Yisrael? Well, it's not really. It just depends. Really, the rule is Yerushalayim. And the question is Eretz Yisrael functioning independently of Yerushalayim or as part of Yerushalayim? Right? And as long as Eretz Yisrael functions as part of Yerushalayim, it gets Kedushat Shechina, which we also call the Kedushah of Chazaka of Ezra. And that's how the Rav explains, right, all the questions that we saw. He doesn't fully deal with the question, at least here, because well, what level of Kedusha does everything else have? Presumably, I mean, he does. It's chosen, right? It has a certain level of chosenness, but it hasn't been manifest yet or something like that. Yeah?
Okay. I just don't understand. I think it's all wrong.
Okay.
I don't understand. How is he saying that the whole argument is based off of the fact that the first thing that he did was come to time?
No, his argument goes like this. The Rambam says Kedushat, again, it's because Kedushat Yerushalayim is forever and Kedushat Ezra is forever. Two, the Rambam lists both halachot in Beit HaBechira. No, he didn't. It was destroyed. He's coming back. Correct, but his point is that when it came to Yoshua, they conquered the land and they only conquered Yerushalayim hundreds of years later and built the Beit HaMikdash decades after that. Right? So Yerushalayim was the end of the process. Ah. So, right? Very good. Okay, good. Ah, good. So now, very good. So Joe, right? Joe's problem leads to a different, right? A set of answers, which is, okay, let's say all this made sense. The problem that bothers Joe the most here is that what is implied by the Rav, that what matters is the order. Right? That it's not just enough for Yerushalayim to be part of the picture. It must be that it starts with Yerushalayim. And Joe's question, very simply, is why? Why does that matter? Right? Why does it matter? Why does the order matter?
Okay.
So you tell me, why does the order matter? Good. This is going to start us on a different answer, right? The Rav doesn't explain why the order matters, but several of the other Achronim, this is what they care about. Why does the order matter? Good. Joe, you tell me why order matters. Since that's your question, good. So why does order matter?
When you start conquest, there's like radiates out and it's a telling.
Okay, so let's push it. Good. So many of the Achronim focus on this and they say, because you need to add one conceptual point to make this all make sense, and that is yeah, okay, so spell that out. What do you mean the starting point? Good or no? Why do I need a starting point? What's important about it? Come on.
That kind of sets the tone for the entire.
Okay, it could be a formal one. Right? Give me, now think, don't use jargon, because you know I don't like jargon, but, what do you need? What is it, all of this imply? What is all this missing? Right, but what is that, in order to make something kadosh, what does it need?
No.
What does it need? Why? Come on, it's not so hard, but you got to just spell it out. Because it needs to be sanctified. It needs a ma'aseh ha-mikadesh. Why does it matter right? Because Kedusha doesn't just happen. It is created. And therefore, order matters. Why? Right? Why does order matter?
I still want to say, so the original of us seeing over Yerushalayim, Yerushalayim was not sanctified then? Before Ezra, Yerushalayim was never sanctified?
No. Yerushalayim was sanctified by itself, right? But when you did the, right, what emerges from here clearly, and other Achronim make it explicit, is that, right, that it's not, right, Kedusha doesn't just happen. It's not like I check off a box and, oh, everything's happened, and now it becomes Kadosh. It's the other way around, right? Let me give you a mashal, okay? Right? When you go to college, okay, right? You go to college, and you hopefully by the end of your college experience, you will graduate, okay, right? You will discover that at the end of your years, suddenly you will realize you have 120, 128 credits. Mm-hmm. You have, let's say, 30 credits to your major. You did all the requirements. Da, 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 da. When you filled all those requirements, right? Okay. What do you need to then do? In order to graduate, what do you need to do? Yeah, how do you do that? You file for graduation, and then they look through your requirements, and if you check all the boxes, right? Right? Now, but you'll ask me, why do I have to file for, what do you mean? I was Yotze everything, right? Doesn't my graduate, my status as a graduate descend from on high, right? Oh, I am graduated. Look, I did everything. Right? Why do I have to file for graduation? And the answer is because no, those are prerequisites. Right? Right? Put it differently. Let's say I didn't go to I went to all the classes, right? Why is there a difference between I go through all the classes, right? Or if I audit all the classes, not even in the college, and at the end say, you know, I took all the classes, can I register now? Why do you have to register before you go to college? Because you have to go to the classes as a student. Right, some places might let you be nice and let you do it retroactively if you pay them all the money, right? Most won't, right? Because it's not about sitting in the classes and having registered, right? There's, right, things have to go in order, right? I need to be a student, and then I need to fill the prerequisites, and then I can file for graduation, right? The fact that I've done that in a different order actually doesn't work, right? I can't go to the classes and then file for being in the school, right? And then automatically graduate without filing. Like, there is a process. I need to become a student. I need to take the classes as a student, and then I need to file for graduate, right? You can't just say, well, I was in Yerushalayim, right? And yeah, that was 400 years after I was in the rest of Eretz Yisrael. And yeah, so I sanctified it. And then when I get to Yerushalayim retroactively, that's how things work, right? You need to, right? Order actually matters because there needs to be an act of becoming a student, taking the classes as a student, filing for graduation, being granted your diploma, right? Things, it's not just that I check the box of the prerequisites, it's that I actually have to do it as such, right? Or it doesn't count, right? Life is sometimes like that, right? And if you don't do an order, sometimes you have to start from the beginning, right? What? Ah, so, but to put it differently, right? What comes pretty clearly from this is that none of this works unless you believe that Yerushalayim or Eretz Yisrael requires a Masa Mikadesh, right? It needs to be sanctified. It's not like there's a latent Kedusha that's just waiting to spring up, right, as soon as you check all the boxes. It's you need to check all the boxes in order to now file for graduation. Oh, I've become Kadosh, right? Yerushalayim is, but Eretz Yisrael was Kadosh before that. Right, that's his point. The Rav's point, right, if you now add the point of Ma'aseh Mekadesh, is look, in order for Eretz Yisrael to become Kadosh, it needs to be sanctified, right? Like, you need to actively sanctify it. That's when it becomes Kadosh. It doesn't become Kadosh later when you check the boxes. You need to check the boxes so that you have everything, so that you can initiate the Kedusha process, right? So he's saying, listen, when we came in with Yoshua, I did a Maaseh Mikdash that was not dependent on Yerushalayim. Why? Because Yerushalayim wasn't chosen yet, right? It wasn't sanctified yet. So Yericho became Kadosh first, and then the I, right? and therefore it was sanctified by a process that did not include Yerushalayim. Right? The fact that I conquered Yerushalayim later doesn't affect Yericho. It affects Yerushalayim. But it can't affect Yericho because the Ma'aseh HaMikadesh of Yericho was an act of Kibush. And therefore, by what standards does it remain Kadosh? If you still conquered it. And if it's conquered by someone else, it loses its Kedusha. But, right, that's what the Rav argues, that it radiates out, right? But what the Rav doesn't spell out so much, and again, it's not, it's a, this was a Tshuva Drasha, right? In which, but what the other Achronim do is that what you, this whole figure doesn't work unless you understand that Yerushalayim and Eretz Yisrael need a Ma'aseh Mikadesh. And therefore, order matters, right? Order matters.
By Ezra, it just seems like they took a pre-existing Dusha and kind of just spread it out.
Right, that's exactly what the Rav thinks, right? The Rav thinks that that's what it means. The Rav thinks that Kedusha at Ezra really was taking Kedusha at Yerushalayim and spreading it out.
The Ma'aseh by Ezra is the settlement of the land?
Exactly. Right?
By taking this and settling.
Exactly, right? So what the Rav argues is that how is settling a Ma'aseh? Well, he says, because it's not really a new creation of Kedusha. What it is taking Yerushalayim's Kedusha, right? By resettling it, it allowed you to spread it out, right? Okay. That's the Rav's argument, but there are problems and there are other possibilities. Now, there are, so what else might it be? Because he says that doesn't matter, because conquest can undo conquest, right? But nothing can, right? But as the Rambam says, nothing can undo the Shekhinah. And if the way they were Mekadesh, the land the second time, was by extending Kedushat Yerushalayim, since Kedushat Yerushalayim stems from Shekhinah, and Shekhinah is, right, not, is incapable of being nullified. Yeah, because Yerushalayim's Kedusha was never batel, that's what he says. Right, and he's saying what Ezra did was instead of relying on it himself, is that he settled Yerushalayim so that he could stretch, as it were, the Kedusha of Yerushalayim, so that the Kedusha at Shekhinah was Mekadesh the rest of the country, right? And that can't be Batel. Well, that's the way he imagines it. Okay, what else might you say? Okay, they spend a lot of time in the Rav's position. What else might you say? How else might you try to solve all these problems? Okay.
Because it's not from this kind of Shekhinah that exists
in Kozaka. You're going back to the Rav. Okay, let's leave Shekhinah. No, really good. Fine. So Kibush is lesser. But so
brings it, say you have a Kozaka Kedusha, and then you also have Kibush on top of it. That brings down this kind of
okay, so that's radical, right? You're saying, listen, Kibush is not just that it's a lesser form, it's like a negative form. Like
it brings down to a base level, not that it gets rid of Kedusha, but that it brings down Kedusha to, like, say, halfway level.
Okay, so you could say that, right? You could say, listen, no, really, Kibush is worse than Chazaka, not just by itself, but even with Chazaka, right? Right, but that's a little bit weird, because why, right? It doesn't seem to, right? I mean, it could be. I don't know why it'd be true.
By Kibush, like, there's clearly not a, I don't know.
God is clearly involved in all the action.
I mean, no, clearly, yes. There does seem to be something more special about something like Chazaka, or, man, that's just the Rav's thing, though.
You're going back to the Rav, right? Yeah. Okay, so let's try this. There could be a very technical explanation, right? And some of the Achronim do this, which is, listen, you're right. Going back to what I just said before, which is that you need a Ma'aseh Mikadesh, said it could be that the answer is very simple, at least on this point, which is, you're right. Let's say Yehoshua had chosen, right? Okay. In halacha, in order to be mekadesh something, what do you need? You need intent. One of the things you need is intent, right? So some of the Achronim say is very simple. You're right. Let's say, forget the Shekhinah, a different model. They think that Chazaka is better than Kibush. Why? Whatever. Kibush, if it's about conquest, it can be, right, conquered by someone else. Chazaka, which is about presence, is more, right? Right, I mean, just think about it geopolitically, right? Conquest is pretty easy to determine, right? Who's in charge of a country? Well, I don't know. Look who's in charge, right? But You know, there are people who have lived in the country under 25 different, right, rulers, and, like, they're still there, and they're still the indigenous people to it, and, right, I mean, think about, like, Russia and Poland, right? It went back and forth a million times, and the people, right, would wake up one day, and today was Russia, today was Poland, but they were still living in whatever city, right? There is something about, I mean, like, in, right, think about the problems we have in Israel, right? Right, the problems in Israel, everyone agrees who was in charge. There was the Ottomans and the British, and then, right, and then the state of Israel. The problem is that you can say whoever you want runs the country, but there have been people who've been living here, Jews and Palestinians, for a long time, and that, right, that reality on the ground doesn't change just because you say it's pre-mandate, post-mandate, right? I mean, right? Like, people living somewhere has a certain, yeah, I mean, right, it has a certain reality, right? I mean, just think about, I mean, honestly, right, think about the way people talk about it, right? The importance of putting facts on the ground, right? Right? Yeah, right? There, we recognize it. There is, it's much easier to say, all the people here now work for me or have to listen to my government, right, to my laws and pay me taxes, than it is to literally get rid of every human being that lives there, right? There is a certain staying power, okay? So now you'd say, but in the time of Yeshua, weren't they also living there? And the answer is yes, but if we are correct that it's not, right, to make something kadosh, you need a ma'asa mekadesh, then it also matters what you intended to do, right? And if Yeshua, it could be that Yeshua, there was a lost opportunity. Yeshua could have said, I'm not going to sanctify it through conquest, I'm going to sanctify it by our presence. But he chose not to. And therefore, if he chose not to, what? Or God told him not to, whatever, right? Okay, sorry. God told him not to because God wanted to be batal, whatever. But the point is that if you think that what makes something kadosh is not filling off a checklist, but having the checklist and then using it to be mekadesh, then it actually matters the way you chose to be mekadesh, regardless of the fact that you now have kibush and chazaka. What matters is what type of ma'aseh kiddush was it, right? When I sanctified it, what mechanism was I using, right? If I used kibush, then it doesn't matter that I also lived there, because I wasn't imbuing that with the power of kiddush, because I didn't have that in mind. What? I mean, so you could say it also wouldn't work, right? Meaning, right, practically, kibush was the name of the game then. Hey, right, you could give, right? So if you look, skip for a moment to the Shur Chaim Sha'al, he says some combination of what Ezra said, what Joe said, which is either kibush actually weakens it, or maybe it's about intent, right? So look at, if you look at the Chaim Sha'al, number 13, he says, Al pizev shar lomar ma'ashik sheksham marana kesev mishnah. The kesev mishnah asks, Eni yodea ma'koch chazaka gadol mikoch kibush, v'lom lo nemar gam b'chazaka mishraga aretz v'chulei. Where the Kesev Mishnah had two questions. Why is chazaka stronger than kibush? And why is chazaka stronger than kibush plus chazaka? V'yesh liyashiv the kibush b'Yisrael v'chazaka b'goyim. Ein makom v'chazaka d'Yisrael shechziku achar kibush d'me'at l'mahani l'umidi achar shezochoy de kibush. Then makom od l'chul z'chiyara chazaka. Said, right? It is sanctified at that first moment, right? You give it a chalois kedusha, right? And once it is, that's it. It's holy. You can't make it holy again. It is holy. And it was defined by kibush. And that's it. Avo b'kedushat Ezra lo zachu elo b'chazaka she'ech ziku koresh u'lohach yamarebet k'dusha rishona kevan sha'aita al yedei kibush kevan sh'nedla batel oto kibush. Okay. And he says, so one possibility is simply whatever came first. Second possibility, right, it's a conversation with someone else. So there are other possibilities going on. Second paragraph, he says, second possibility, umei achar shekein. Another way. Efshar lomar duodem b'kibush rishon l'dara rambam lo kanu b'chazaka di b'kibush kivnu l'knot. V'lo kivnu l'kon b'chazaka. It's a technicality. They didn't have intent. Right? They just didn't have intent. V'lo kivnu l'knot b'chazaka, v'imkein lo kanu b'chazaka, d'bein and chabana. They didn't have intent, so it didn't work. Okay, so, right, that's basically the Chaim Sha'al's answer, which is, you're right. Chazaka, if Yeshua had done it with Chazaka, it would have worked. But it didn't for two reasons. One is either whatever comes first sanctifies it, and that defines the Kedusha, or it's about intent. And they intended to conquer it with Kibush and not Chazaka, and therefore it's defined by the parameters of Kibush. Within this framework, it's not about Shechina. It's simply about intent, right? And then you have to explain, well, why is Kibush weaker than Chazaka? According to him, the logic is as follows. Kibush can be undone by Kibush, like we just said. Chazaka is harder, and he says, right, he gives you another reason. He says, listen. Yeah, he says, there's another way in which you see that Chazaka is stronger. Chazaka, the second to last line, he says, Yesh tzad Chazaka adef mi Kibush. Kibush has to be done by a community. Chazaka can be done by individuals. Why? Because think about it. Right? Kibush is conquest. Right? You can have someone who buys up land and builds a presence, whether or not there's a political change. Right? Kibush, which is political, like it's much more objective, right?
You still need people to live on the land.
Correct.
Because
they were always there. But that's the thing, is that they never fully left. They were never in charge, but there were always Jews living here. Right? That's exactly the point.
How many people need to be living?
So, presumably, there'll be a difference between the initial and then remainder.
So, like, if there's no, recognizable community, right, that lives...
So that's the thing, is there always was.
A few that lives up north, but, like, the entire rest of the land are completely unsettled. And, like, how much...
Right, so you could say, well, aren't there limits... Right? Correct. Now, look, the Chaim Shaul solves a few problems, right? Which is basically, he says, what's the benefit of Kibush over Chazaka? Well, Chazaka is better, it has more staying power, whatever. Why is Chazaka better than Chazaka plus Kibush? It isn't. It's a technicality. Right, it's just they didn't have Kavanah to be Konech Chazaka, either because it goes by the first moment or Kavanah, meaning... Basically, he's solving the problem by saying it's a technicality. We just didn't do it through Chazaka. But you're right. You still have to ask the question, well, why does Chazaka have so much staying power? Right? He doesn't fully answer it. Now, I will note that neither the Rav nor the Chaim Shaul answer the question, right, which is, what is the relevance of David? Remember, we said one of our problems with what is the relevance of David's Kibush, neither of them explained that. Right? Yes, Mordechai. Yeah. Right, that's not actually what happened, right?
I think that the staying power matters if people still view the country as one.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's really the answer, right? Meaning, look, in the end of the day, this is the reality, right? If you think about it, right? I mean, look, if you have a city... Right. If you have 10 people that move to a huge, vast plot of land, you will not say that that is a city. But if you have a city that is populated by 1 million people and then it's hit by, right, a hurricane and most people leave, right, and there are the few people staying there, right, they are the remainder, right? There is something that once something's established, right, you maintain a connection, right? Like you see all these stories, the last person, right, I saw a report recently, the last person in some city in the middle of nowhere and like, Russia or something, right, where he's the last one left, and he's the mayor and the only citizen and, right, and the tourist, or whatever, right? One person moving to a city will not make it a city and become mayor. But if it used to have 1 million people, right, he remains, he's the, right, there is something to that. And part of it is, like Mordechai said, that part of it is, and then if people view it as a country, right, if people relate to it as a whole country, then even if there's 10 people in the whole country, right? If people relate to it as the remainder of that, that's how they relate to it. I mean,
I think that the real question is kind of this. A Jew lived in Gaza somehow, and...
There probably is.
But there'd be more than one community.
Yeah, because
that's no
longer part.
Correct. Now, very good.
Right? So what, who's the
So I think part of it, right, is that, in that sense, I would add, on a political level, right, on a political level, I would say there is a good political explanation, which is, you can only have one sovereign. Right? So If it's about kibush, it's about sovereignty, so then it can be undone. But as we know, in modern Israel, right, doesn't matter who's sovereign. If you have people living here, there's a reality to that regardless. And you're right, were the Romans living here also? Yes. But that's not the question. The question is it not Jewish? Right? It's not whether it's, right? Kibush requires you to ask who is positively in charge. Chazaka requires you to ask, has their presence been removed?
Are there people?
Yeah. Exactly. Right? It's, the Kedusha is there, and the question is, has it been fully removed? It's easier to, right? It's harder
is
to.
Is Chazaka actual living settlements? Like, say, I have one Jewish person in Israel.
Right, it doesn't mean that other people aren't there. It just means that it has not lost the status that I gave it. Right, that I think is the saying, but I think that's the strength of Chazaka.
The status of what we're
It's still Israel, right? Because there's still people, Jews living here, right? I think that's what where it is. Politically, there's a logic to it.
But you say this is the remainder of the Jews.
Correct. There are other people here, but if you're asking whether, right? But right, I mean, think about it, right?
This is a remainder. This is the Jewish community.
Correct, but the country, right, I mean, think about it, Ad Hayom, right, Native Americans will still say, what do you mean, this is our land, right? Even though they're not sovereign anymore, right? Right? But these are our ancestral lands, and we still relate to it, and still holy to it, right? It was ours, and there's something, there is a reality to that, right? And people relate to it that way, right? They do, right? We just do. Okay. Reb Chaim has a different explanation. Reb Chaim, based on the Yerushalmi, comes up with a different explanation. We'll see how many we get through. Reb Chaim says you're misunderstanding the whole thing. Okay? Reb Chaim says, got it wrong. It's not about Chazaka, it's not about Kibush, it's not about anything. It's about one question. First time or second time? That's it. Why? That's right. That's right. Why would he say something like that? So this is how Reb Chaim reads the Yerushalmi. Look at the Yerushalmi now. You can either look at it on the sheet, but if you want to look at it in your art scroll, you can open up to whatever it was, whatever it was in the art scroll, right? Okay. He reads the Yerushalmi as follows, okay? Yerushalmi notes that in a pasuk, Yehoshua is at some point called Yeshua without a hey. Vilama, I didn't give you all of it, so I'll get to the point where I put on the sheet. It says Vilama Yeshua. Why is he called Yeshua without a hey? Rabbi Hillel Berei de Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachman Pagama Kavod Sadik Bekever Mivnei Kavod Sadik Bishato. It took away some of the honor of Yehoshua to honor Ezra, who was at that time. Because he was the tzaddik of that time. And then the Gemara says, and this is what I give you, okay. Hikish bi'atan, this is what you already have on the sheet. Hikish bi'atan b'mei Israel, v'atan b'mei Yehoshua. The Torah compares the entering to Israel of Ezra to that of Yehoshua. Ma bi'atan b'mei Yehoshua p'turin ayu. Just like in the time of Yehoshua, they were exempt from the mitzvot v'nit chayvu. And they became obligated. So av bi'atan b'mei Ezra p'turin ayu v'nit chayvu. They were exempt and then they became chayav. Which means that there was, right? You needed to sanctify it again because it wasn't kadosh, right? Mima nit chayvu. Rabbi Yossi Rachanin amar midvar Torah nit chayvu. They became chayav from the Torah, dichtiv. God will bring you to the land that your ancestors inherited. Your inheritance is like that of your parents. Ezra's is like Yeshua's. Both are Doraita. And then it continues. God will do good to you and make you greater than your ancestors. Avotecha p'turinayu, your ancestors, meaning in time of Yehoshua, were exempt, v'nit chayvu, and became kadosh. Atem p'turin, v'yitem v'nit chayavtem. Avotecha lo hayalem ol malchut. V'atem afal p'sheyesh alayem ol malchut. And now he says, but you're better. They were able to make kadosh the land only because they were not conquered. But you, Ezra, will be able to conquer it even if you were under other people's power, which they were under Koresh. And furthermore, the fact that Ezra is better than Yeshua is proven from the fact that Ezra took, in the time of Yeshua, it took 14 years for it to become Kadosh, the 7 years of conquering and 7 years of dividing. As soon as you entered the land, you became Kadosh. Yeshua, in order to make the land Kadosh, it was all or nothing. And he says, "Aval atem rishon rishon koneh mit chayev." Okay. So the Yerushalmi is a bit cryptic, right? It establishes that Ezra is better than Yoshua in several ways, namely that he could be mekadesh a little bit at a time. He didn't need the whole land. It didn't take 14 years, right? He could be mekadesh the land even when under the dominion of the Persian Empire, as opposed to Yoshua, could only do it because he. So Reb Chaim looks at this and he says, okay, so what does the Yerushalmi mean? So he comes up with the following chiddush. So look at the last source, 16. He says, about 10, 7 lines down, V'tzarech lomar, de'eno taloi klal bizman. Said it's an order thing. God wanted the first Kedusha to be done through Kibush, and the second through Chazaka. In that order, the Im Shmei Kibush. Hayak Kfar Suri Kedusha Rishon Akedei Kibush, etc. Right? You can read it inside, but what does Reb Chaim basically say? He says, listen, here's the Kiddush. It's not because Chazaka is stronger than Kibush, it's because the second Kedusha is building on the first Kedusha. And what the Rambam really meant was as follows, based on the Yerushalmi, He tivchav your bacham yotecha, you are better than your forefathers. Why? Because your forefathers came first. Right? And there's a difference between creating something the first time around and tapping back into that which already exists.
So it's like a process which exists.
Exactly. And he said, so Reb Chaim reads the Yerushalmi, he says, you know what Yitzchave Rechame Otecha means? That God wanted to be two stages. The first one through Kibush, and then after that, Chazaka. And the second one is more staying power because, right? Like, you know who this is, right? The more times you do something, the harder it is to get rid of it, right? You know that, right? It just, right? Right? It is, right? The first time you do something is the hardest, right? And each time you do it, you're building on what exists, and it's easier, right? And he said God wanted it to be that the first Kedusha was Kibush, and the second one would build on that with Chazaka. Why is it stronger? Because it was second. Because it was the Kedusha that followed on the first one, and therefore, what is it doing? And this explains everything for Reb Chaim. Why is it that in the time of Yoshua, things only became Kadosh as you conquered it, piecemeal? But in the time of Ezra, as soon as you started, the whole thing became Kadosh. Yeah, because all you're doing is reigniting the Kedusha of Yeshua. What? And once you do it twice, it never goes away. Right? What?
Today's settlement, what is that?
Nothing. Nothing lacks.
But then why is the Kedusha?
So on the level of Kedusha Haaretz, he says, it's Kadosh. No, it's Kadosh. Right? Why does the Rambam, he's explaining the Rambam. Why is it according to the Rambam? Nowadays, Eretz Yisrael is kidshal sha'ata v'kidshal atid lavo. Now it's Kadosh. And nothing got rid of it, including Galut. Answer, it was the second one. Why is Shemitah not obligatory according to the Rambam nowadays? Not because there's no Kedushat Haaretz. There is. But because of a local halacha in Shemitah, which we're not doing right now. Right? Right? We're going to do it. We're doing it in my share, but we're not doing it here. Right? Which is, remember we said yesterday, there are two reasons why you might not be chayv in Shemitah nowadays. One is because the land is not Kadosh. Or because the land is Kadosh, but there's a local halacha in Shemitah. Right? According to the Rambam, it's the second one. It's because the Gemara introduces a unique principle by Shemitah called Kol Yoshvei Alel. Then not only do you need Kedusha, but you need everyone living in the land, maybe even in their ancestral homelands. Right, based on Shemitah V'Yovel. Exactly. The Sugya Ne'erchem. Exactly. You did that. Yeah, okay. That's Sugya. Exactly. And that's a local halacha and shmita. But in terms of the kedusha, it's fully kadosh according to the Rambam. And according to Reb Chaim, what the Yerushalmi teaches you, it's really about order. It's because your avotecha came, so you're better. That's it. Potentially, yes. Right? So different mitzvot have different standards. Right? Right? So it could be that Truma is and Shemitah is not, right? Well, maybe. Right? That's too dead in the Yerushalmi. Right? It's the first and second day in the 10th parak. It's Machloket in the day out in the Yerushalmi. Now, according to Reb Chaim, though, we can explain something else, which is, so why is it important for us to, right? Reb Chaim is the first person to explain, why does it matter, therefore, that David conquered Syria? Why does that matter nowadays? It shouldn't. Ezra never settled it. And even if he did, it should be kadosh fully because it was nikdash bechazaka. Reb Chaim. And what's the answer for Reb Chaim? No, the history matters. Because what does chazaka do? It reignites.
The gasoline. The future gasoline.
Right, exactly. Which means that whatever part of Eretz Yisrael was conquered by Kibush Rabim, when Ezra came and settled it, it got back the kedusha of Rabim. But if Syria was only sanctified by David at a lower level kedusha of Kibush Yachid, then Ezra's dwelling can bring back that kedusha, but can only bring back whatever kedusha it had originally. It's not a new kedusha. It's the reigniting of that which existed. So if it had a lesser kedusha to begin with, then when you reignite the flame, it's going to stay at the longer, right, as weak as it was then. And that is why there was a huge discussion of what, yes, exactly. There was a major machloket poskim, which is, wait a second, if that's the case, what happens when Israel conquers the Golan or Eilat, right? Does it become kadosh mid'oraita? That's a big machloket, right? And it was American and Israeli poskim were weighing in extensively. I gave Sharon it a few years ago. I'll send you the links. When we did Abu Dzara, I spent time on this again. I probably will later in the year, but I haven't done it yet this year. But yes, that's exactly the question. Okay, so far what do we have? Okay, we have three explanations so far. Okay, one possibility is, this is all a technicality. Chazaka is not better than Kibush. Chazaka is better than Kibush, but the only reason that Kedusha Ezra is more than Yeshua is because in the time of Yeshua, they didn't have Kavana to do it that way. In the time of Ezra, they did. It doesn't explain the relevance of David. The Rav says the difference is, right, whether you start with Yerushalayim or you start with Eretz Yisrael. If you start with Yerushalayim, the Kedusha radiates out and it's forever because of the Shechina. If you start out, then it does not. Reb Chaim says, no, you totally misunderstand it. It's not about Chazak, it's not about Kibush, it's about the first versus the second. The first is done by Kibush, and then Chazaka reignites it, and God declared that once you have that process where you fill, where you go in order and you do a second Kedusha, then it's permanent. Why does it matter to find out whether the original Kedusha was Kibush Rishon or was Kibush Yachid or Kibush Rabim? Because you're reigniting Kedusha. Right? So maybe, right? That's the two dead in the Chaim Shal. Presumably then it would have done it, but he didn't, or something like that. Okay. Let me run through a few other possible answers just to sort of get it out there. The Griz takes this up in his Perush on Zecharia. The Griz, right? It's a lot of briskers in this year, right? Okay. But fine. The Griz being one of Reb Chaim's sons, Reb Yitzchak Zev's Alevi's Alevi, so in addition to his Perush on the Rambam, he has a Perush on Nach. And in his comments on the Haftorah of Shabbos Chanukah, don't ask me why here. I don't understand. He has a discussion of it. And he says, is that me? No. Oh, that is. That's me saying that Ray Ginsburg is going to SAR. Yes, he is. Okay. Fine. So he says he also bases himself on the Yerushalmi. One second. Look at the end of 12. Second to last paragraph. Da malach amar halo yadato. Ve'emet evin shemar'e lo ha'kdusha shniya. Ela du'e savur de la kdusha shniya. Gam kein yitzarchu chibush lo. Edain nivu'a lazeh shazarchu chibush le kidush. Vim kein gam ha'kdusha shniya titbatel kmo kdusha rishona. Kevin shitbel ha'kibush. Da-da-da. Ve'alzeh shiva malach lo b'chaya ve lo b'choch ki im beruchi. So it's very simple. You know how I know it's different? You know how I know that the second Kedusha is about Shechina and therefore doesn't require Kibush? Because the Navi says that, right? When the Navi says in Zechariah, right, that you will conquer Israel, what does God say? Lo b'chayav lo b'chalach ki'im biruchi, which tells you that, exactly, that the first one was done by human beings and the second one was done by God, and that's what the Navi is telling you. And that's why the second one is stronger. There you go.
Why didn't
you do it
the first
time? What? I don't know. You got to ask God. Okay?
In my eyes, I would say the exact opposite.
I don't know what to tell you. The Tosfot Yom Tov has a different technicality. Tosfot Yom Tov says as follows. It's very simple. Okay? Give you another one. I'll just try to run through a few more answers. So Tosfot Yom Tov has a very clever answer. It's very technical, but it's very clever. And he says it's very simple. Kedusha Rishona was about Kibush. And therefore, what makes it Kadosh? Right? Who's sovereign? Second one is about Chazaka, which means living there. Right? Why could that never be Batel? Because the Jews were given permission by the Persian king. So now even if the Jews are conquered... Right, meaning, right, the whole point is that we had permission, right, we didn't take it by sovereignty, the sovereign granted us power, and we became others under another sovereign, so what are you going to do? Right, we were already under another sovereign, and we got permission, so what's going to happen? Someone else going to be there, and we're still going to be living there, so it's kadosh, meaning when you sanctify through kibush, it matters who's in charge. But when you live there under a different sovereign, then sovereignty clearly doesn't matter, right? It's a very technical answer. Chasam Sofer is yet another answer in Chulin. Which is similar. And he says, yeah, look, in the end of the day, since we were living there under with permission of the Persians, so even when Persia was conquered, but as long as the Greeks were in charge and they let us live there, so it continued, meaning as long as... Again, it's a similar answer, that as long as Jews are living there, if the Kedusha happened when you were under someone else's sovereignty, so then, as long as you still live there, regardless of sovereignty, nothing has changed fundamentally. Right, so presumably, according to all these answers, if every Jew was kicked out of Israel, right, then there would be no Kedusha, right? That's what it sounds like according to these answers. What? Except for Yerushalayim. Correct. Okay? So let's just go over the answers we saw, okay? And as you see, Toch Kedei, you learn something about Kedusha Eretz Yisrael, right? So the Rav's explanation is there's two types of Kedusha Eretz Yisrael. There's that which is created by human beings through Kibush, and that is temporary because it depends on political realities. And then there's Kedusha of Yerushalayim, which depends on God. The only way to make Kedusha Eretz Yisrael last forever is... by making it an extension of Kedushat Yerushalayim rather than an independent one. Reb Chaim says, no. The only thing that matters is first or second. Right? First Kedusha is different than the second Kedusha. Right? Because it builds on it. And that's why the second Kedusha reignites the first one. And that's why, however Kadosh it was in the first time, it is in the second time. And that's why it still matters whether there's Kedushat Surya, Kibush Yachid or not. And that's why it's easier, because you're just reigniting it, and that's why it takes less effort. The Grizz says, I don't know, the Nuffy said, the first one is done by war, the second one is done by God. That's why the second one is God's. I don't know what to tell you, right? Chaim Shaal says, you're right. It could have been that the first Kedusha would be Kadosh, right, with Chazaka, but they didn't have a Kavana. And since it's about the Ma'aseh HaMikadesh, the moment at which you make Kadosh, it doesn't matter that later on you live in that, it matters when you sanctified it. And then you have variations. So he said, Yom Tov Chasam Sofer. He said, no. When you make something Kadosh under someone else's sovereignty, that means it's harder to undo, because as long as Jews are living there under some sovereignty, so it has the exact same nature of Kedusha as the original one. Okay? The last thing I just want to throw out here is that, as we've noted at different points here, there does seem to be a sense at which, even if it's not Kadosh, it's Kadosh in potential. Right? And you see that especially in, like, Reb Chaim's answer, right? Where, right, the second Kedusha reignites the first Kedusha, which shows that, even if it wasn't there, right, something existed. But something I just want you to think about, which is really a share for another time, is that all of this seems to assume that, like, there's no, when there isn't Kedusha, there's zero. But that doesn't seem to bear out in the sugyot. And even more so, you know why it doesn't bear out in the sugyot? Because where is it that we're chayev to conquer? Right? It's not like anywhere, right? It's not like if we conquered Nebraska, right, the Jews, it would be Kadosh, right? It's if we conquer Israel, it becomes Kadosh. Right? Which means that there seems to be some sort of, right? So this is where the Rishonim already in the Kaftar of Erech and build up really Nachronim say that there's another level that you need to fill in here, is that all this Kedusha is about Kedusha for the purpose of Chiyuv Mitzvah, but there's something else called Shem Eretz Yisrael or something like that, right? Which is that there's Kedusha for the purpose of being Chayiv in a Mitzvah, and then there's, is something Israel or not, right? And the Kaftar of Erech says that Israel, all of it, Israel large, always has Shem Eretz Yisrael, even when it doesn't have Kedusha, and that's why you're able to sanctify it, right? Because it has a reality of being Israel even before it's Kadosh, right? And that sort of is in the background, but that's really a shir for another time. Maybe if we have a shir klali at some point, we'll develop the implications of that. But this is a little bit just on Kedusha Rishana and Shniyah, and why it is that the second Kedusha that we have is Kadosh. But as I said, for the purpose of Shemitah, Rashi, again, you guys haven't done this, I guess, fully, but you should know, Rashi thinks that the question of whether you're chayv in Shemitah nowadays hangs on whether there is or is not Kedusha Ha'aretz. But the Rambam, as we've spelled out, believes that there is Kedusha Ha'aretz. And nevertheless, he thinks Shemitah B'zman HaZeh is not Da'oraita, according to Rov Rishonim, Rov interpreters of the Rambam. That's because of the local thing, which is, in addition to all of this, certain mitzvot have other requirements in addition to Kedusha Ha'aretz, and that's what you saw in the Sugyan Erechin, right? But that's not what we're doing now. That's what I'm doing in my shir, in Shir Yomi, right? Shir Klali Dafka, I was covering the topic. I'm not. And I assume at some point you guys are doing it. I know Rishmul Dod already did this, right? But it's time for me to stop. So for now, we'll stop there. But these are some of the other issues that we have to do elsewhere, you know, at other times in the year. The unique Kedusha, right? Kedusha of Shemitah, of Kol Yerushva Aleha, and Biat Kolchem, plus the question of, okay, all this is about Kedusha, but when there's no Kedusha, is Israel really nothing? Right or not, and presumably the answer is no, it's still something, and the question is, what is that something, and what implications might there be to that status, okay?